Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome, everyone. I am Doug Goldstein from the Rich as a King podcast. I am driving in the driver's seat today on the Money Tree podcast. We have a fantastic panel of people here to answer your listener questions, which we get lots and lots of and would love a lot more at moneytreepodcast.com. Let's say hello to Miranda Marquette.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Where are you now, Miranda?
I'm still in Idaho, which is great. I've been traveling a lot lately, so I'm very excited that I've stayed put for a little while. Sometimes it's nice to just kind of be home and catch up on bills you haven't paid and other things.
All right. So a homebody, Miranda. Joe Salcy, hi. Are you with us today?
I am sitting here waiting for Miranda to pay my bills.
Nice. I'm sending her mine, too. I didn't know you both did that.
That's Man, awesome. I wish that I was willing to pay you guys' bills, but I'm just not.
That just is not cool.
You have to pay your own bills.
I got to write a negative review about Miranda.
That's okay. Lots of other people do, too. I'm the hated one. It's okay. I can take it.
And laughing in the background is the wonderful Linda P. Jones. How you doing, Linda?
I'm great. Just hanging out in the rainy desert. I was up in Seattle. It was dry. It's pouring buckets in the desert. Go figure.
Whole new world.
And I think it's worth noting that we recently got a listener comment, a listener mail. It wasn't a question. It was a simple email message that says, thank God for Linda P. Jones.
Really?
And I say, I'm right there with him.
Aww.
I say that every stinking episode.
That is funny. Aww. I actually was in my office the other day. A guy comes in. You know, I like to do financial planning in Israel. This guy walks in and he says, Doug, I heard you. No kidding. He goes, I heard you on the radio with Linda P. Jones. So we are honored to have you, Linda. And I'm not kidding. This
oh
is really
my goodness. That is
we
hilarious.
Are not just joking with you. All right, let's stop with the jokes and get right to it, because we actually have a lot of letters to cover today. Our first question today is from Scott. He writes, I just graduated college and got my first full-time job. Yay, Scott. I don't get a 401k match for another year, but I want to start investing now. I'm leaning towards opening a Roth IRA, and I have a quick question. I'm aware that you pay taxes on the front end for the Roth IRA, whereas a traditional IRA, you pay taxes only upon withdrawal. However, by being taxed on deposit into the Roth, I lose out on compounding interest and the taxed portion. Under normal conditions, would the sum of the taxed money with its compounding interest be more than if I got taxed on withdrawal from a traditional IRA? Hey, Joe, you take that one. Maybe you could explain the question and give us an answer.
Well, the question actually, it's funny. Thanks for the question, Scott, is all about which one's better, right? The Roth or the traditional IRA? And like Scott says, when you put money into a Roth, you don't get to put the whole thing in because you're using money that already was taxed. Maybe it was payroll tax, but it came from somewhere, probably has been taxed already. Versus if you put money into like a pre-tax 401k or into an IRA, you get to the entire contribution. So let's say it's $100 into the traditional and maybe only $80 into the Roth IRA. So the answer then is this: the further you are away from the goal, the more the Roth has time to catch up because of the fact that you're not going to pay tax on the back end. And the bigger the ball gets with that 100% of money into the traditional, the more tax you're going to pay on the back end, right? You got more money in there, so you're going to pay tax to take it out. We have a few assumptions that you have to think about, which are, you know, what are tax brackets going to be in the future? And we don't know what that is. But generally speaking, if tax brackets stay the same, every investment house has this calculator, which one's better, Roth or traditional. And generally, the way it comes down is this: the younger you are, the more valuable the Roth is. And the older you are, the less valuable the Roth is, the more it makes sense to get the tax break in your hand today. Now, that said, I've answered this question a lot. You guys probably answer this question a lot, too. Which one's better, the Roth or the traditional? Don't really even like the question. I like having both. And the reason is I like to have some tax planning today, some tax deductions today. Like, let's say I put all my money in my 401k because I want tax breaks today. Then I get to retirement and all my retirement money is just in the 401k. Well, how much tax planning can I do then? I really can't do any. If I want to eat, all my money's in a spot where I have to pay tax. The Roth doesn't give me any benefit today, but it gives me flexibility later. So if I've got some money in the Roth and some money in traditional, I get a tax break today and I get tax flexibility later. But younger, generally better for the Roth.
Joe, that was a very good answer. I don't have anything to add to that one. Linda, Miranda, you?
Nope, that was great.
No, I think Joe covered it. We've got lots of questions, so Joe's our winner.
Yeah,
I should have just said, ta-da!
Good job, Joe. All right, Justin is knocking at the door. Justin, thank you very much for the cool letter you wrote. Here it goes. Justin writes, how much attention should I give to the news of insider trading, the legal kind? And what he's talking about, just to be clear, is that when management and directors of companies buy or sell shares of the company, it's required to be disclosed publicly. And so you can know whether people are buying or selling. So he writes, I understand executives of a company are likely to have a better idea of where the company is going. But aren't these trades made on a predetermined schedule? How much weight should I give to the news of insider trading when deciding what stocks to buy or sell? Keep up the great work. I look forward to each new episode of the podcast. So thank you, Justin. Great question. Really, this is sort of a new topic for us, I think. I can't remember if we've discussed it in the past. Linda, why don't you kick off?
Sure. Well, it's interesting to note what insiders are buying. I don't think it necessarily is a great indicator for most of us because most people who work for a company, while they do have, maybe the executives have, you know, some information ahead of time from other people, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to work out to be a great investment. So it's something to watch. It's not something that would be an indicator for me to buy. Having said that, it is part of the CanSlim method where it's part of the information that IBD puts together when looking at a stock, but it's not the only thing to look at. And number two, I would say that the more interesting thing, if you want to kind of follow this line of thinking that I occasionally watch, would be something more like, what are the billionaires buying? The ones that manage large pools of money. And there's an app called, I believe, iBillionaire. And you can actually follow along with what the billionaires are buying and see what their trades are. So to me, that might be something that might be akin to the same kind of idea of what you're thinking of as in terms of getting information that someone might know or someone might have an inside track on, but not having to necessarily follow an insider.
Nice. Miranda?
Yeah, I actually agree with Linda. I think that's a great idea to kind of look and see what the other trades are, what the other trades are happening. You do need to realize, though, when you are following insiders, when you are following these kinds of billionaires or these other trades, one of the things you have to remember is by the time that information becomes public, you have a very limited window of time to act on it before people start going crazy up in here. So that's something to keep in mind as you move forward. So just keep that in mind. Just realize that once the information gets out there and once more people are aware of it in the public, your window to actually trade effectively gets smaller.
Great. Joe, what do you have to say for us? Should people be following the insiders?
I like building a knowledge platform when I buy individual stocks, just as many questions as possible. And actually, Justin has a great part of his question that I like, which is, aren't these trades made on a predetermined schedule? It's pretty easy to see that because when I look at insider trading, which you can find just about anywhere that you follow stock information online, readily available, you'll see them trade the same number of shares or the same amount of money every quarter. And you know then that there's a financial plan behind that. But I'm not looking for those. I'm looking for the something that's not a part of a financial plan. They either bought or they sold recently. And I agree with Linda and with Miranda that that doesn't give me information, but it leads to the question, why? And the more information I get where I can ask the question, why did they do that? Why did that happen? Why did that happen? I can sometimes begin to put together, well, this is an announcement that I think might be coming up in the future. You can't play that too much because insiders, as we've already talked about, have so many times that they can't trade before big announcements happen. But more information is never a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of information. Actually, there was a study out of the University of Michigan that did look at and kind of supports your point that when insiders are buying, that is a positive sign for the stock. However, one thing that they point out is the study showed that it's the net purchases, meaning if you find one insider and he's buying the stock, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But if you find there's a trend among the directors and they seem to be buying, this study seems to indicate that that's a bullish indicator. But you have to remember, certainly take that with a grain of salt, because You know, a lot of companies, if you work for the company, you are either required as a new executive to buy shares because that's part of the deal, or you're pressured because you got to be patriotic to the company and buy shares. So you might see someone buying shares not because he believes in the company, but just because he wants to keep his job. And so, again, it's not just because you see it up on Yahoo Finance, it doesn't mean that the stock is going to go up. And also, don't forget, a lot of these people, they may be very good managers or CEOs or CFOs, but they may not be good stock pickers. And just because a company might be doing well, it doesn't mean that the stock is going to go up. So the difference in the way that someone who is in a managerial or directorial position sees the company is not necessarily how the market sees it today or is even going to see it in the future. So I think it's a great question. And it is, like Joe said, it's one data point that you should look at, and you should look at it. But, you know, I don't think that's a way to manage a stock portfolio only.
Can I mention one more thing here, Doug?
Joe, we're out of time. We're up to the next question.
Well, there's an exchange-traded fund that actually covers this, and it's ticker symbol KNOW. I'm going to try to get the people from that fund on the show just because it's such an area that people don't know very much about. What's interesting is Morningstar has a 5-star rating on the fund, and every single year, the last 5 years, that, by the way, none of this means it's going to, I can hear Lynda P. Jones rolling her eyes right now from here. It doesn't mean that it's going to beat it in the future. And it's such a wacky way to track stocks. But what these guys do with this ETF is they take insider sentiment from the things that Justin's talking about, and they invest just based on that. So wacky, yeah, something I might do with all my money, no. But listen to this. 2012 beat the S&P, 2013 beat the S&P, 14 beat the S&P, 15 beat the S&P, and last year beat the S&P. So who knows if there's something there or not, but I think I'd love to talk to the people that actually do this for a living.
Great. That's interesting knowledge. I hope you can get them. Love to have them on the show.
Yeah, I think they'd be great guests. Good idea.
All right, let's move on. Let's look at the next letter from a new investor. He says, hello. You know, he says, hello. He has an exclamation point.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
first of all, I love your podcast and the knowledge that you guys so graciously impart each week. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that. I am a recent college graduate, and I am blessed enough to have a full-time job that pays $45,000 per year. I have roughly $21,000 in a Schwab account. Wow, that's pretty good. You just got out of school, and you have 21 grand. Nice job. He says, I know little about investing, but from listening to you guys, I have put a little bit of money into a broad ETF and a little bit into an S&P 500 index fund. My question is twofold. Number one, my company offers a 401k but does not match. Would you recommend opening up a different account, such as an IRA? And number two, I have a working budget each month. Currently, I put all my leftover income into a savings account. Would it be smarter to split this excess money into an index fund and my retirement fund each month? Sorry if this is confusing, and I appreciate your time. So let's break up the two questions. Lynda, let's start with you. He says, my company offers a 401k but does not match. Would you recommend opening up a different account, like an IRA?
I would. I would recommend opening a Roth IRA, and I would not put money into the 401k if they do not match, because the investment options that you have within the 401k are going to be very limited versus having your Roth IRA, you're going to have an open, broad expansion of basically being able to invest in just about anything in that account. So I would suggest you do that.
All right. That is a good suggestion. I'm with you. Miranda, what do you say?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. And I would just like to kind of remind you that you can have the index fund in your retirement account. So that's just something to keep in mind as well. You can hold an index fund in your retirement account. It does not have to be either or. But with that, I guess that huge amount of money, that kind of goes over the amount that you can contribute to an IRA. The nice thing about the 401k is that 2017, you can contribute up to $18,000. So if you have $21K just sitting there and you want to get a nice big fat tax deduction for your contribution, you can put it in the 401k, but it would be a traditional, it would be a tax deduction. The money would not grow tax-free. So it just sort of depends on what your situation is and what you think is going to happen with the future, kind of like what Joe talked about in our first question today. I hope I didn't make things more confusing for you, but there it is.
All right, Joe, do you want to confuse the listeners anymore? Do you have a little input on whether he should be investing in an like in an IRA or in the 401k, which doesn't match?
I actually go back to what we talked about last week with Claudia Pennington, and know yourself, because the only issue I have with what you guys are saying to avoid the 401k and go into a Roth is that I know a lot of people that historically given that advice is, yep, that's the right move to make, and they never do anything. And putting money in your 401k at work is so easy because that decision's just taken right out of your hands and the money's just gone. Know yourself. For a lot of people out there, and statistically for the majority of people out there, the best advice is, who cares about the match? It's a tax advantage vehicle. It's handy at work. Do that, because otherwise you're not going to do a thing.
Yeah, I just want to touch on the word he used, confusing, because actually a lot of times I find when I talk to people about an IRA, they don't even understand what it is. I remember when I started in the business like a long time ago, people used to come up and say, I'd like to buy an IRA. That was the phrase that a client would use. I said, what do you mean buy an IRA? They go, yeah, I want to put at the time $2,000. I want to buy an IRA. And it just didn't make sense. And so just to kind of clear some of that confusion, just like you might have a brokerage account in which you could buy stocks or bonds or mutual funds or ETFs, index funds, you can have an IRA, which is a self-directed account. If you do it through a brokerage firm, it works just like a brokerage account, except instead of being called, you know, Linda P. Jones brokerage account, it would be called Linda P. Jones IRA account. And the money that's in there, which could be invested exactly the same way as you would do in your regular account, but the money in the IRA would grow for you on a tax-deferred basis. So realize that there's a lot of opportunities, and if you're able to structure things for tax-deferred growth and you're not going to need the money for a long term, then IRAs usually are a pretty good choice. All right, let's move on. I have a working budget each month. Currently, I put all my leftover income into a savings account. Would it be smarter to split it? So, Linda, would it be smarter to split it?
Well, here's the thing. He mentions that he has the broad market ETF and an S&P 500 index, which actually they aren't all that different in the sense that there's, you know, the S&P 500 is going to be invested across 500 different companies, albeit it's market cap weighted, so it's going to have more weight on the big ones. And the broad market ETF, if it's an equally weighted fund, will have equal weight across those same, well, it could be on the Wilshire. So it could be, you know, more companies, let's say he has. But here's the thing. He's going to have some companies that are smaller in that broad market ETF, but I think you should actually look at having some asset allocation to small cap growth, small cap value, mid cap growth, mid cap value, large cap growth, large cap value, and the S&P would be in that large cap section. And so I just think it's important right now to, and of course you'd also have some international, but I think it's important right now to have some weight in the small caps because that's what's actually outperforming everything else right now and may continue to in this very tail end of this long historic bull market that we've had.
Oh, and Linda is predicting the tail end of the bull market. Is that right? That means we're at the end? We're about to fall off the cliff?
Well, I'm just saying this is the second longest bull market that we've had in history. So we are overdue for some sort of correction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We heard it here first. Joe, you have anything to add to that?
Not much. Just on the savings account part, savings accounts are only a good idea if you've got an extremely short-term goal or if you're building your emergency fund. So if the emergency fund is built and you don't have any short-term goals, then look for longer-term asset allocation and avoid the savings account because you're not beating inflation with that money.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think once you have an emergency fund, then you can go ahead. And especially at your age, it's reasonable to be investing long-term. Miranda, you ready to add on to that, or are we going to talk about what Michael has to say?
I'm good. Let's move on to Michael.
Michael says, hello, Miranda.
Yay.
And gang. It's like Lacey recognizes you first. I have a question about dollar cost averaging. But before I ask the question, let me give you a little background about myself. I'm 26 years old, and I'm focusing on long-term buy-and-hold index investing. Now I know why he likes Miranda. The company I work for does not offer a 401k. Can I say, guys, every letter we're getting, the companies these people work for are not offering anything in terms of a good retirement plan. So it's good that people take care of themselves. Sorry, that was my side comment. Okay, he says, the company I work for does not offer a 401k, so I have opted to invest the maximum of $5,500 into a Roth IRA through Vanguard. The asset classes I have chosen to diversify into my portfolio are the following: large value, large blend, mid value, mid blend, small value, small blend, US REIT, international large blend, international small blend, and emerging markets. I currently have about $12,000 in my account. My goal is to invest $500 per month and to bring back the portfolio once a year, every January, to my desired even allocation of about 9% in ETF. My question is, once I do the reallocation next month, how would you recommend which ETF I should be putting the $500 into each month going forward? Thank you for your excellent podcast you guys put on for us listeners. Michael. All right, Miranda, let's start with you because I think that you do know some pretty good tools for dealing with this.
Yeah, so I think when you have a lump sum like that, I don't know that you need to divide that up into $500 a month. There have been studies that indicate that when you have a lump sum like that, investing it immediately at once is more likely to help you more over time. The nice thing about the dollar cost averaging is that you can still have that some of that money available to you pretty liquid. But at 500 per month, it'll take you quite some time to get that down and to be getting that into the market. I think that you might consider looking at your asset allocation and go ahead and put in the asset allocation you want and divide that entire 12,000 up at once. And that might be something to look into, run the numbers, consult with an actual financial professional like Doug and see if that works. Maybe Doug thinks something different. But if you've got that money sitting there and it's something that was there right now, you could divide it up. If I'm understanding this right,
I'm wondering if his question is if he's adding $500 more per month.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
So what's an efficient way of doing that?
Yeah, so an efficient way of doing that. Well, first of all, do realize that $500 a month will put you over the $5,500 that you are allowed to invest in a Roth IRA. So do realize that, first of all, if you are going to do $500 a month into an IRA, that will bring you over your amount. You actually need to drop it down to something closer to $450 a month rather than the $500 a month and find another place to put that extra $50 a month. And I just think the easiest, which ETF should I be putting it in? Well, if you have an asset allocation you want at 9% in each ETF, then look and see which ETF is, look and see what you need to do to rebalance it so that your asset allocation is what you want it to be. So the ETF you put it in is the ETF that is missing the asset allocation. I don't know. do you understand what I'm saying here? Like, look at your asset allocation. If you want, if your desired asset allocation is 9% in each ETF, look at how the money's divided up. Look at how your asset allocation is. And whichever ETF doesn't have that allocation, if you've got an ETF that has like 18% and you want, and another one has much less, then you want to sell some shares of that ETF and then move the money into another ETF so that you're balancing all out to 9%. So the ETF you put it in is the ETF that you need to do the balancing in. So I guess, and then if you're going to put the 500 a month in each month going forward, you should be able to divide that up. So you're equally putting that 500 a month in each ETF, I guess. So if you have that 500 a month, divide it up so that 9% goes to each ETF so that you're keeping your asset allocation stable throughout. Wow.
Hey, Joe, what do you think about asset allocation?
No, I agree with Miranda. I think that as long as you meet the minimums for each one and if there's no trading fees, then certainly just break it up by percentages and have it go into different accounts. Could I say first, this wasn't Michael's question exactly, but I think he's a little over diversified. I don't think he needs small value and small blend, mid value and mid blend, large value and large blend for a $15,000 account. I think that that he could be tighter. If it were me, I would just decide if I want blend or value in each one of those categories. Pick one, pit large value or large blend, mid value, mid blend, small value, small blend. He's got less to worry about there. Here's what I would do too. He's 26 years old. If this is my money with the $500 a month, I pick one of the more aggressive positions. I totally agree with Linda. There's another shoe that's going to drop here at some point. We don't know if it's tomorrow, next week, next year, 2 years from now, but the market's going to go down. And for somebody sitting in Michael's shoes, that's a fantastic opportunity. So why he wouldn't be dollar cost averaging into something that's going to fluctuate a lot. In other words, he's not going to catch the falling knife, Doug, at the bottom, right? But what he can do is, as the market's tanking, be putting $500 a month or $450 to Miranda's point, putting that into something that's going to go down the most, because then that's the one that's going to come up the most. And then, you know, as he gets closer to his goal, move that $450 then more toward his diversified approach like he's doing with the rest of his portfolio. So I would leave the money he has there in a diversified portfolio. I would take the $450 a month and I would put it in something fairly aggressive, knowing that history's not on the side of this run continuing a lot longer.
Yeah. And just so you know, the exact dollar amount that you can invest each month in an IRA is $458.33. And that'll bring you to your $5,500. So if you're investing in an IRA, you're going to have to find something to do with that with that little extra money, because $500 a month will put you over the limit and there will be penalties.
And I also got to do another caveat while we're adding these on, which is, Michael, we're also not your financial advisor. We don't know you. That was kind of a shot in the dark with very little information. Frankly, if I was still a financial planner, you haven't given me nearly enough information to even tell you close to what I just said. I just think it's an interesting strategy, looking at what I totally agree with Linda. The other shoe's got to drop soon. And if that's all the data I have, something to think about.
Well, I do want to agree with you, Joe, about the over-diversification. I think Miranda mentioned that too. A blend is typically growth and value. So by having the blend and the value fund in each category, you're actually overweighting the value part of your portfolio. So Joe said to have one or the other. I agree. I would go with the blend and drop the value in each category. And I'd also like to see a little bit more large cap, even though that's not my favorite asset class right now. I do think that most asset allocation models have large caps, you know, usually at least 2 times to 3 times as many large cap as they do other assets. So the fact that you have them all equal, I'm not a big fan of that in terms of your asset allocation. So I'd put more toward the large cap and I would get rid of the value.
All right. That's good. From an asset allocation queen, Linda P. Jones. The one thing I would just comment and then we'll move on to the next question is simply that this model sounds like there's a lot of friction in it. There's a lot of buying and selling and rebalancing. So I don't know how you're set up, but just make sure that you're not giving away all your profits and fees, because if you're just dealing with relatively small amounts of money every month and trying to buy and balance, each of these transactions may have a fee, and that could really do some damage. All right, let's move on. Let's move to Hunter, who says that I am a recent college grad working and earning approximately $45,000 a year. Well, now we have two letters. We know what recent college grads earn. I'm glad about that.
That's enough of a representative sample to call it official.
Okay, so people who are in high school listening to the show, you should know that when you finish college, you get $45,000 a year. Decide whether it's worth the investment at the college. No, seriously, you should join the military. Much better deal. I'm putting 7% of my money into my company's Roth IRA, and they don't match. Yet we learned something else about it, yet another company that doesn't match. I have a working budget where at the end of every month, I put all unspent money for that month into my savings account. I'm pretty disciplined at doing this. I like discipline, and I like saving it as an emergency fund. Do you have any tips for short-term savings like this? I'm starting to feel the sentiment, saving is for chumps, and would like to feel more fulfilled. Thank you for all your advice and knowledge. I have learned more than I could ever have learned on my own by listening to the Money Tree podcast. All right, Hunter, this is a really good question. Linda, let's start with you.
Okay, I'm really scared, Hunter. You've learned all this from us. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you for listening to our show. And you sound like a great saver and on your way to being a great investor. So good for you. I'm so impressed by the people who are writing us who are saving and contributing and, you know, putting money into their 401k and all of that. It's fantastic. So good for you. I would just say that saving is not for chumps. Saving is one of the beginning necessary parts of wealth building. So congratulations to you for saving, because what that does is that actually gives you principal to invest and to compound and to build wealth. So whether you do that in the stock market or whether you buy a home and do that, you know, it gives you lots of options in terms of where you want to put your money and get some sort of return. So I think that's fabulous. I just think that, you know, you're putting money into a savings account. I think you can certainly build that savings account. You want to have an emergency savings portion. And then above and beyond that, you can, you know, contribute to a Roth IRA. You can, you know, invest on the side in different things. But I think you really are opening up your options by having a healthy savings account. So good for you.
Okay, so thank you, Linda. Joe, what do you think? Do you think that savings is for chumps?
Savings for cool people, man. You kidding me? Get in the water. It's warm, Hunter. No, I see what he's saying, that, and this is a common argument that I see bloggers have online, which is that savings accounts pay nothing. And as we talked about earlier in the show, they don't beat inflation. So I think I should probably eliminate it. And I think that's just a horrible idea, because the cool thing about the savings account is when you have that emergency fund, it allows you to be much more aggressive with your portfolio. So people say, well, the savings account is losing, my portfolio is winning versus inflation, why wouldn't I invest all my money ahead of inflation? And the answer to that is, we don't want to look at the individual parts, we want to look at the whole. And when I have that emergency fund in place, and I know I don't have to touch my investments for the next 3 months, the next time the market goes down, I can stay fairly aggressive, and I don't have to worry about what if I need that dollar. But if I don't have the savings account, and I have my money in an aggressive spot, and my muffler is dragging behind my car, I either have to go into debt and hope to wait out the debt repayment and pay off the debt, or I have to go after these assets while they're low. So I like the savings account because overall, I think it makes my returns better because I can be much more aggressive with my investments than if I didn't have it.
Okay, so you're pro being aggressive. Miranda, are you an aggressive kind also?
Kind of. So my
medium aggressive.
That's just interpersonal life. Let's talk about investing.
No, so my actual approach to this savings situation and this emergency savings situation is this. I don't have a lot of money in my short-term I tier my emergency savings. I have a long-term emergency savings and a short-term emergency savings. So the way I do this is I keep 3 to 4 weeks worth of expenses in my short-term savings account, my short-term emergency savings account. And so that is 3 to 4 weeks worth of expenses in that account. Once I get to the point where I feel like, because it's a high yield savings account, right? So it's my high yield savings account. I'm making air quotes around high yields because it's 1%, right? So 1% yield. So I keep 3 to 4 weeks in there. And every couple of months, I review the account. I see where it's at. And if I've got more than 3 or 4 weeks worth of expenses in there, I move the money into my long-term emergency savings, which is a straight up all market index fund that is in a taxable account. And that is my long-term emergency savings. So I actually tier it out. It's not getting particularly sexy returns, but it's still better than my short-term. So the point of this tiered savings approach that I have, this tiered emergency savings approach I have, is I want to be able to immediately access money in the case of an immediate emergency. So that's why I keep 3 to 4 weeks worth of expenses in this high-yield savings account. That way, if something happens, that money is liquid, I can get to it, and I can live off of it for 3 to 4 weeks. In the meantime, that buffer gives me the chance to start liquidating investments from my long-term emergency savings, which is held, like I said, in an all-market fund in a taxable account. Now, the interesting thing about this is I haven't had to tap that account for a few years. The last time I tapped it was when my basement flooded. And at the time I did that, that was 2010. You might remember the market was down then. And I actually ended up selling at a loss, but I had the capital I needed. There was still money left in my account. And since I sold it at a loss, my flooded basement ended up being a tax deduction. So I sold it at a loss, so I took the tax deduction. And so, but
you're such an optimist, can I just note?
Right, yeah. So,
good
so the
for
point-
you. Basement flooded, and then I got a tax deduction.
And I got a tax deduction. But the point is that having this tiered approach has been really great for me because it has helped me feel good about the yield that I get. And even during a down market, I still have the capital that I need available to me. And it's separate than that long the retirement savings that I have that it's in a, that are in tax advantaged accounts. And so dividing it up that way has really helped me feel better about it. I feel good about the fact that I'm saving. I've got a nice chunk in my short-term emergency savings that I can access if I need it. But at the same time, I'm getting that yield and that higher yield and building that capital a little bit faster on the other side. But you do have to be comfortable with the concept that when you sell from your long-term emergency savings, you may have to sell at a loss. And you have to be comfortable with that. And you have to be comfortable with the risk that is involved. And I do spread that out by using a straight up all market fund. So consider that if you're looking for a little more yield and you can handle that and your risk tolerance is in that place, that's something that might work for you too.
Miranda, I have to tell you, I'm not a long-term emergency fund kind of guy. I've actually never heard of that term before. For myself, I keep an emergency fund, which is cash. And I don't think savings is for chumps, Hunter. I think actually that savings is savings in cash is so important. For myself, I actually keep money in cash, not only for myself and my family. And it was funny, you said like 4 to 6, and I'm like 4 to 6 months, that's good. And then you said 4 to 6 weeks, and I was like, oh my gosh. I think I'm just like a much more nervous person than you are. Anyone else have anything more to add? I'll take that as a no. Okay, we are just about out of time now. So before we wrap up, anything exciting, Joe Salcija, you want to share with us that's going on at Stacking Benjamins?
Dude, it is a very fun place to be because we are all about having those big, huge discussions. Like I mentioned last week, betting on the Super Bowl. We also very soon are going to have one of the best stunt car drivers. He did almost all the Fast and Furious flicks. We're going to talk to him about how he got into that cool career. So not just talking money, talking about careers and human resources and other exciting things at Stacking Benjamins.
Sounds excellent. And Linda P. Jones, what is going on in Be Wealthy and Smart?
Well, at the Be Wealthy and Smart podcast, we're talking about Dow 20,000. Will it continue? What does this landmark mean? Is it meaningful? Is it not? And all of the things that go along with that.
Sounds great. And what is going on with you, Miranda Marquette?
This week, I just kind of want to encourage you. I have been writing for Student Loan Hero. It's kind of my, you know, real job now. I do it from home, so it feels like it's not a real job. It's great. But check it out. I've been writing about, you know, trying to decide whether the fixed rate or adjustable rate mortgage is right for you, as well as reasons you should be paying down debt in 2017. Spoiler alert, one of them is so that you can invest more. So come on over to Student Loan Hero and check out some of those articles about investing and homeownership that I've been writing so that you can kind of see where to stand and where you can kind of get a jump on your finances.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. All right. The Rich as a King podcast, which is based on how the strategies of chess can make you a grandmaster of investing. I did a podcast recently. I think people might really enjoy the episode at richasaking.com. All right. Listen, this was a great discussion. Thank you all very much. Miranda, it's time for you to take us out.
Yes. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com. You'll find a little contact link, and we are happy to hear from you. We would love to answer your questions. And it does sometimes take us a little time to get to them because we get so many questions and we love it. We love to hear from you. So go ahead and send us your questions. That's moneytreepodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to us. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. So get out there and find us, subscribe to us so you never miss an episode. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So remember to invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.